Good morning, everyone, and welcome to our Sunday service. For those of you who don't know us, my name is Nayaswami Gangamata. This is my husband, Nayaswami Daiva. We live and serve in our Ananda Portland and Laurelwood communities, and it's truly a joy for us to be here. So thank you for having us. We'll both be sharing in the talk this morning, but don't worry, because the secret of a good service is to have a good beginning and a good ending and have the two as close together as possible. Our topic this morning of why do devotees fall remind me of a saying that a very wise man once said. He said, God made us, God made the pitfalls, so he's probably not very surprised when we fall. And there's a good reason for this, so that we can become stronger, so that we can see the pitfalls, we can become more aware of them, we can go around them, and then even more important, we can keep moving forward. A couple of weeks ago, Dive and I were taking some time off, and one of my pitfalls is I love to get magazines in the mail, these subscriptions, and they miraculously appear with this little card in the middle, and if you just check something off, then you get 12 more issues for free, or 24 or whatever, and you get all... Anyway, I just love gathering them, and anytime I know I'm going on vacation, I tend to stockpile them. So here I was piling them up, and I looked over at my bedside table, and as I was getting ready to pack, there were my pile of magazines, and there was the Autobiography of a Yogi by Paramahansa Yogananda. And if you haven't read the Autobiography of a Yogi, please do so. It's a wonderful story of Yogananda's life from when he was a little boy, and as he journeys, it's really his pilgrimage in finding his guru, and along the way he meets incredible saints. I think it's just only on page 8 or 10, saints are appearing, disappearing already, and he gets into all sorts of trouble as the book progresses, and then he does find his guru, and it's just a beautiful story. But it almost looked like there's a picture on the Autobiography of Yogi, and it almost looked like Yogananda was looking at me, and then he was looking towards the magazines and saying, now, are you really going to take them and not me? Where are we putting our consciousness? Are we putting our consciousness in the things of the world or in God and spirit? And it's so easy for the mind to start to, what, go downward, isn't it? The chanting was beautiful this morning. Thank you. Chanting, there are affirmations put to music. They're affirmations of who we really are. I was thinking that the advertisers years ago on Madison Avenue really got it right. They created all those jingles. That we remember, don't we? They keep coming back. What's the one that you talk about, the Winston?
Winston tastes good like a
cigarette. It's amazing. But what if we chanted those beautiful chants over and over? Yogananda has a saying, you know, take care of the moments and the years take care of themselves. What if in those moments we chose to think of spirit, to think of God, instead of the things of the world? Environment is stronger than willpower. It's hard to remember God, isn't it? To go back to my story, I did bring my pile of magazines. I did bring the Autobiography of a Yogi. The first night that we got to our lovely place by the beach, I actually picked up the Autobiography of a Yogi. I was so proud of myself. So anyway, I just picked up. It's the book. It's the kind of book that you can pick up anytime. And you're reminded of a story, you get a deeper understanding. So I read it. I couldn't sleep that first night. I remember that night when I finally did go to sleep, my dreams felt super conscious. My dreams felt expansive, uplifted. When I woke up, I felt happy. Well, the next day, after we went out and got our cup of coffee and came back, we were going to have the afternoon just lolling around. We were truly on vacation. I reached for my pile of magazines. And I went through every single one of them. And boy, was it fun. Home and garden, travel, etc. Well, I noticed that night as I was dreaming, my dreams were different. I don't really remember what they were, but they were a little bit agitated, whatever. You know, I woke up not feeling that same sense of happiness or joy or peace. Felt like I had to go out and buy something. Again, where are we putting our consciousness? Where are we putting our thoughts of God? And that's where Ananda comes in. It's so helpful to be part of a community like this because it's hard to remember. What happens when we fall? Just recently, I went through a difficult time and I was struggling and I found myself with a tendency as to what? To kind of hide away a little bit right, and not go out. And it's a good thing we have two homes in two different locations. We can always hide in the other and nobody really knows where we are. But I was really hiding and I was struggling. How do I rise from this test? And I asked a dear friend and she said, serve, serve, serve. At Ananda, we say service is joy. Because what happens in service? We forget ourselves. We forget who we really are. And through that service, we're reminded of why we're really here. We're reminded. And then in that satsang, I remember the very first work day I went to. I used to call it a work day when I first started coming to Ananda. It was an all-day Rajasi day. And I thought, why would anyone want to go to an all-day Rajasi day? But, you know, you start the day with a prayer. And then you're, because you're serving, you're not serving yourself. You're serving a greater cause, a bigger cause, a cause out just outside of yourself. You get into that flow and you're serving with others. And before you know it, they were ringing the bell for snacks. And then before you know it, they're ringing the bell for meditation again. And then lunch. I thought, now this is the way to spend the day. This is the way, really, to live life. So when you go through those times, it's important to remember to serve. But the more that we can fill our consciousness with thoughts of God, I was thinking, especially in Portland, but I know everywhere, we have such a more refined sense of diet for our bodies. It used to be years ago that as long as we didn't eat too many potato chips and ice cream, we were okay. But now we talk about gluten-free and vegan and raw, and there's such an awareness, right? So if we eat ice cream too many nights in a row, we know that's not good for us, right? Well, you know, depends what flavor. If it's stracciatella, that's my favorite. But what about the diet for the mind? What are we thinking in those moments? Again, the moments take care of the years. It's okay to have ice cream one night, but if we're having it every night, it's okay to look at those magazines. But if I'm not picking up another book and filling my cup, before you know it, then what happens? You're disconnected from spirit. You're disconnected. And then you wonder, why did I fall? Why did this happen? And then again, being part of Ananda or a spiritual community reminds you that God and the masters are always with you. It's such a blessing. There was a man that was overheard praying. He said, "Dear God, so far so good. I haven't done anything wrong today. I haven't hurt anybody's feelings. I don't think I've made any mistakes. But in a few minutes, I'm going to be getting out of bed. And I'm going to need a lot more help." The masters, they're always with us. God is always with us. What is the equation on the spiritual path? It's 50% the grace of God, 25% the grace of the gurus. I don't even think the giants have the good odds. I mean, that's pretty amazing. And then the other 25% is our effort. We do have to give 100% of our effort. And at Ananda, we talk about meditation and service. They go hand in hand. Why? Because in meditation, we get to let go of all those thoughts that we have of ourselves, whether we're great or not great, whether I failed today or I didn't fall or I did greatness, whatever it is, we put that all down and we tune into something so much deeper. The more we meditate, the more we want to meditate, the more we remember. And we take that remembrance, that feeling of joy and peace, like I had when I was reading the autobiography of a yogi as opposed to reading all those magazines. We take that feeling. It's so much more deeper in meditation, but it has to be a regular practice. We take that feeling, and then we take that out into our service. And then service truly is joy, because then we're sharing that and we forget ourselves. So when we fall, when we do great things, whatever, it really just doesn't matter. But remembering to seek God first. That reading, if I would have picked a reading from Whispers this morning, that was perfect. You know, in all my activities, let that joyous spirit flow through all the activities in every moment. So God bless you all. Let Diva now share. Thank you for having us.
Good morning, everybody. It's nice to spend this time with you. About, 25 years ago, I was already on the path, and I was living at Ananda Village. I had moved there with my then family, my daughter and her mother. In 85, I think we moved there. In 89, I became part of the Builders Guild, the Ananda Builders Guild, and we were working construction. Hello, nice to see John. Nice to see some of you other builders. We've got some long, We've got some long history. thank you. We've got some long history together. Many of us have been on the path for now decades. But we heard that a new community was going to be started. David and Asha Praver were getting ready to actually start what became the first full-fledged Ananda community outside of the village. I know Sacramento might argue that, but we're going to give it credence anyway. And I was asked to come and work on what is the Ananda community here. And it was one of the greatest privileges of my life. I came before we bought the property. Ananda has a habit, and I think it's born of necessity, of buying derelict properties because we can't afford anything else. But it provides an opportunity that otherwise would not be there. And I think it's divinely orchestrated because we have to then take the properties. If we bought properties that were nice, we would use them as they are. But because they're derelict, because there is so much needed, we feel compelled to get in and actually, from the very center, from the very core of them, rebuild them and build in the vibration and the consciousness. And it does something else. It builds community. It builds friendship. It builds relationships. And it allows for the power of spirit to move through us in creativity in a way that's then lasting. Yogananda said you should immortalize your dreams in architecture, and it's just one aspect of that. But I spent 2.5 years here. They were central to my spiritual development. David and Asha have been caring for people. Where is David? Is he in here? Hi, David. Thank you. They've been caring for people and helping them find their way now for decades. They were some of the first pioneers with Ananda. They used to, when it was just Ananda Village, they would go up and down the western seaboard, and they'd go from Ananda Village up to Portland, up to Seattle, and they just give satsangs and just make things available and make themselves available. And it was on the strength of that that Portland and Seattle developed. We are the directors, as she said, of Ananda Portland. It's been a long time since I've spent much time here in the Palo Alto area. It's a great privilege. This is one of the great centers of the world, both materially and spiritually. I find it a little bit interesting that the very first time that we're back and invited to give service, some 25 years later, the topic is how devotees fall. We gave a satsang a couple of nights ago up in Portland. And just a chance for people to ask questions, just to share and connect. And one of the people in the satsang said, I need some help. I'm having a real difficult time. What do you do? What does a person do when they feel that the leadership of a church they might be going to, of course he belongs to our church, when the leadership is making decisions you feel very badly about and very concerned with? And it's a fascinating question. And I realized in contemplating today's topic that it's perfectly in line with the conversation of how devotees fall. Now, there are legitimate concerns that everybody should have. This is a path of great discernment. And it's a path of self-possession. We have to learn from inside out how to feel the flow of divine grace, how to feel the power of truth, of dharma, of goodness, and how it's trying to express itself. So we cannot go to sleep at the wheel and just assume that whatever the leaders or they are doing is okay. But what I found over the years of being a devotee is that there are many, 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 many layers to truth, and many, many layers to how God would work with things that are not obvious, often even with great refinement, but are certainly not obvious when we are coming to the path or when we are when we're trying to sort for things, it's not always obvious. I'm going to take a little detour. I'll come back to this point with grace. I've been increasingly touched and inspired by the the parallels, the things. You know, we live in the only country in the world that was born for Dwapara Yuga, that was born for this age of energy. Every other nation has got a history that takes it back into Kali Yuga, into the Dark Ages. We live in a country that was born for an age of possibility, an age of interconnectedness. And then you look around this room, this is a hotbed of interconnectivity, the whole peninsula, you know, and the whole planet. This is one of the greatest places to be. You see that movement of energy. And physically expressed, it was defined during the Revolutionary War. That's when the flag was planted. That's when the battle was done to establish a beachhead for a different way of people living on this planet. And it's interesting that prior to that, those who came for the purpose of religious freedom. We live in a country that was born for Dwapara Yuga based on religious freedom. But it's not enough. And so Yogananda was then born in the late 1800s, 140 years, 130 years later. Think about the time span. Think about how long it's been since Yogananda lived. I mean, we're talking not many years. The timeline between this is really fast if you start to look at it with any kind of a sense of long rhythms. Yogananda was born. And he was born then to come from India and to bring into this country a reawakened sense of spiritual possibility, to give new definition to spirit, to give us access to it from inside out. And Ananda is in direct lineage with that mission. Ananda carries with it the seeds of awakening, not just for us individually, not just for our little sanghas, but for this planet. And you see it spreading. There's a desperate need for direct connection with spirit globally. And Ananda is, in fact, a part of that, that movement of energy. It's surprising how many times things are done to help us to awaken that are not within our box. I referred to the revolution because I've been reading a lot about the founding fathers, the founding brothers. And there was a time, it was a messy process. The creation of this nation was, you know, it looks so simple from here and so obvious. But the dynamic tension and the uncertainty and the questioning and the great souls that were born to bring this understanding into the world at that time, there were many different perspectives, and all of them were valuable, part of the weaving of the tapestry that's made this country and made the life that we currently share. But they had to be audacious, many of them, to hold the strength of their understanding. And at one point, Benjamin Franklin, in the midst of this dynamic tension, he said, it would behoove all of us to question our absolute certainty about our own understanding. And really, that's the problem that's how we fall from the path. That's how devotees fall. We become so certain that we know where happiness comes from. We become so certain that we know what God's got in mind. And it has to look like this. I just know it. And the second our mind goes down, we may be right. Part of the problem is we may be right. But we may not. And it's the assertion of our own understanding. It's what Judas did. He knew how it was supposed to play out. He was absolutely certain. We get caught in that box. How can they behave like that? How can a... They're a devotee, for God's sake. They're a great soul. They're a nice one. How can they behave like that? And then we start to... What happens is a very small thing happens. All of the path is about us uniting with life. And that very thought, how can they, distances us. It starts the process of separation, of moving away from that unity. It puts us into contradistinction with something else. And that leads through the process that was read about this morning. We would do well, if we would be successful on the path, to be willing at least to question our assumptions our first assumptions, our deepest assumptions about how life really works. And what's interesting, if we really want God, if we really want that joy unalloyed, is we often find ourselves with life or with the masters or with God or however you want to play it, playing tricks on us to help us break that assumption. There's a cute story from the autobiography, from The Path, I think, about the autobiography of the yogi, about Swami Kriyananda. He's cooking. He was a fabulous cook, along with being a great master. And he's cooking, and he's got somebody who's one of his disciples working there with him. And he starts cooking, and every time he puts a pan down or a spoon down or something, she takes it and cleans it. So she's being very serviceful and stuff, but a little bit caught up in the doing, right? So he does something, she cleans. Pretty soon, she finds that more and more and more pots and pans are being used, until finally, he's going so fast and making such a mess, she can't keep up. And she finally gets the joke. Often God will press us where we are most assured, where we stand the strongest. God will come up and press us to really make us question. Because the way life works, all spiritual maturity, it could be boiled down to just one thing. All maturity, but all spiritual maturity. An expanding sense of awareness. An increased understanding of the great scope of what's going on. And often within our own context, our thoughts are exactly right. But in a broader context, they're completely wrong. They miss the point. We're deeply privileged, all of us together, to be here in this. I swear, when they were thinking Camelot, they modeled it after this place. It's one of the most blessed places on the planet. And in large part, we got up this morning and it was just clement, easy to go out and energize, easy to come back in and meditate. You didn't have to bundle up. Nothing was happening. Sun was just shining just right. You know, the winds never blow, but fair. Streets are paved with gold, which of course reminds you of the joke of the miser who died and decided to take all his gold with him to heaven. And he gets there and St. Peter looks at him and says, "You're welcome, but why did you bring all these paving stones?" It's also an easy place to go to sleep. We are in a time when there's great abundance and endless blessings. But much of that abundance and many of those blessings are being harvested at the price of things that are being lost permanently. It's not a sustainable pattern. Ananda, the simplicity of life, and I know many of you know this, but it's just good to remember the simplicity of life that Ananda promulgates, that helps lift our consciousness, helps keep us blessed and free, is also the very pattern of life that makes life sustainable. I know you've got Ananda Farms, as well as the community. You've got the patterns of service and joy and freedom. It's a very simple life that we live, even in the midst of all this abundance and magazines. It's just good to remember that if we don't want to fall, if we don't want even the hint of separation to grow within us, we need to stop asserting that we know how it works. Ask the question. Question our first assumptions. Listen for the divine answer. If it still doesn't reconcile, go ask somebody else who doesn't seem to be puzzled by it. What is it you know that I don't understand? Help me embrace a larger reality. You may come back around and discover that you were right, but you won't have that same sense of separation and arrogance and self-assured commitment to your own opinions. It's a remarkable thing. And introspection can help us enormously in that process. And let's celebrate the grace that we've got in these great souls that lead this community, that have built this family of saints. You know, this is one of the paths that I've seen on this planet over 30 years where it really works. Where how we come in, if we're sincere and just day by day we participate, we find growing within us the presence of God and the capacity to share that presence with others. So thank you all for the privilege of being here today. Let's take a moment of silence, just briefly.